Yo, what's up? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Monday, January 18th, 2021. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr. Joining me is Tim Ma-Fucking Geddes.
Let's him host bless. It's good to be here with you on this beautiful Monday. I haven't talked about video games for a whole 48 hours. Let's get to it.
Let's get to it. Tim, how was your weekend?
It was fantastic, man.
Yeah, you much? It was a
lot of sleeping, playing some video games, you know? Can't complain. Mm-hmm. Can't complain. Watch some fun television shows. Things are good.
Exciting stuff. I pretty much did the same thing. Like, this whole weekend has been a gaming weekend, most of which I can't talk about yet. But, like, it's been a good weekend, is all I'll say. It's been a very fun weekend. I'm excited to talk about some of the things that we've been playing. Mm-hmm. But we'll do that later. Tim, for now, I want to talk about some news. Let's talk about Jason Schreier's report on Cyberpunk 2077, a new PlayStation studio, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames, roosterteeth.com, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. To be a part of the show, at patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, where bronze members or above get to write in, and silver members or above get the show ad-free with the exclusive daily post show. Housekeeping for you, in case you missed it, the Blessing Show, episode 1, is available right now over on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. I give out my non-game of the year awards. Check out that episode if you want to know what that's about. The next episode of the Blessing Show is coming this Thursday. I don't want to spoil what it's about, but it's a killer episode. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, shit. Killer Instinct?
Oh, Kevin figured it out. It's Killer Instinct. It's not. Stay tuned for that, though. It's going to be a very good one. And then after that, the Blessing Show will be out every other Thursday. That's something I want to make clear, because I don't know if we made it too clear so far. The first episode up last week. Next episode, this Thursday. After this Thursday, will be every other week. This for the first month, we wanted to do that back-to-back so you guys can get that quick first two doses.
You know?
Exactly.
Everyone's waiting for it. It's like, we got to go hard two at once, and then after that, you got to wait.
Tim, that WandaVision is such a good show. I watched it multiple times during the week.
So did I. Yeah. And it was just fantastic.
What do you think's going on?
So much good stuff. And I love this. I love that since Mandalorian season 2 specifically, I love that even before that, it was The Boys season 2. Mm-hmm. Every week having something to look forward to, like a reason to care about specific days in a time where time makes no sense. It's just so nice. You know, like, I'm already looking forward to Thursday this week.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah. No, it's super cool, too, because it's one of those shows that you get to talk to people about and be like, all right, so what do you think is going on? All right, no, this is what I think is going on. And the fact that, like, we're back to getting shows every single week that we can look forward to and theorize mm-hmm. about that way. Very cool. Very awesome Very stuff. Cool. Everybody go watch WandaVision. Tweet at me with your theories. No spoilers, though, please. Thank you to our Patreon producer, Blackjack. Today, we're brought to you by Purple Mattress, but I'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Rover Report. It's time for some news. We have four stories today.
Baker's Dozen.
Tim, would it surprise you that there is more to talk about with CD Projekt Red and Cyberpunk 2077?
No. You're kidding me. What?
Yeah, no. The train keeps on going. Last Friday, Jason Schreier did what Jason Schreier does. And he put out a whole report talking about what went wrong with CD Projekt Red. He interviewed about 20 people. I'm going to pull from Matt Kim at IGN, who has a write-up about Jason Schreier's write-up, because, of course, when Jason Schreier does his thing, he writes a whole book. He writes a novel. He really gets into the nitty-gritty. Matt Kim has a good summation of what Jason Schreier had over at Bloomberg. And so this is Matt Kim at IGN. Cyberpunk 2077 was 2020's hottest game, and it was shaping up to be a good enough launch when reviews for the PC version began trickling out a few days before its December 12th release date. But once players got their hands on Cyberpunk 2077, especially the PS4 and Xbox One versions, excitement turned into frustration as players encountered bugs, glitches, and more. In a report from Bloomberg's Jason Schreier, developers at CD Projekt Red knew the game was not ready for launch in 2020. According to one developer, quote, they expected the game to be ready in 2022, based on the progress the team was making back in 2019. Beyond just bugs and glitches, Cyberpunk's overall performance and playability on consoles, like the base PS4 and Xbox One, have been reviled. IGN gave the console versions of Cyberpunk 2077 specifically a 4 in its review. One hurdle was that the developers tried to develop the engine and game simultaneously, a decision one developer on Cyberpunk says was like, quote, trying to drive a train while the tracks are being laid in front of you at the same time, according to Bloomberg. Cyberpunk 2077's console versions, not the PC version, have been hammered by players for glitches and bugs. Some bugs, which are game-breaking and end up crashing the entire game or sometimes the system is being played on. And I want to put a pause there because I also want to acknowledge the PC version does have its fair share of bugs also. But the console versions definitely have way more issues than the PC version. Back to the article. Developers seemingly pushed through challenges by believing they could overcome these obstacles themselves, similar to the infamous BioWare magic. But Cyberpunk 2077 was also developed through periods of intense crunch. In a follow-up tweet, Schreier claims that despite promises from management that crunch would not be required, some managers guilted employees into working more hours by saying other employees will work longer to pick up the slack. Salaries were also reportedly low, with one junior programmer making around $700 a month. As for why early previews of Cyberpunk 2077 demoed to the public at events like E3 2019 looked better than the final product, that's because the demo was entirely fake, according to the report. Neither code nor the gameplay was finalized when the demo was made, and months spent working on a fake demo took away from developing the full game. Shriver's report also references things like cultural challenges caused by language barriers. There's this whole double-dip release strategy that the studio wanted to go for, where the game obviously was meant to come out in spring. One reason why they wanted it to come out in spring was so that they could release on current, I guess now, last-gen consoles, and then release again on next-gen consoles and have that double dip by having both those console versions out. Obviously, game got delayed, and so that didn't happen the exact way they wanted it to, even though we still have next-gen versions coming scheduled later this year. And then another thing that the Schreier report references is the fact that the game was announced in 2012, but apparently full development didn't start until late 2016. Tim, where do you stand with all this?
I mean, look, there's so, at this point, like, where do I stand with, like, one of the most complicated, just, like, there's so many different facets that go into this, right? Like, at the end of the day, I stand against CD Projekt Red and how this all went down. Like, how many times do we need to say, like, this game should not have been released the way that it was? Just period. How many times do we need to say that, like, crunch is bad and we need to fix all this stuff? All this says to me is, we being now in 2021, firmly in 2021, developers, publishers, media outlets, everybody, they need to open their eyes and start paying a little bit more attention. Because if you make these mistakes constantly and you do not change, you do not fix, despite the countless flags that have went up for the last decade, but specifically the last couple of years, Jason Schreier is going to get you. Jason Schreier is going to get in there and expose the living fuck out of you and the entire team. And that it hits a point where there is no recovering from that. So it's like that fear alone should probably motivate you to make some changes on top of the, you know, human decency side of the whole thing. Right. But this was inevitable. Of course, Schreier was going to get in there. And of course, he was going to talk to people. And of course, that's going to craft a narrative that is extremely not favorable to CD Projekt Red for good reason. They made a lot of very, very, very poor choices.
Yeah. Now, reading through this report, like, a lot of it is non-surprising, just given the context of how everything has gone down, right? Like, seeing the game delayed multiple times, like, from the spring into September, from September into November, and then from November into December, I think that paints a clear picture of, okay, yeah, like, we know this thing isn't ready yet, but we think we can get there. Okay, no, like, it's not ready, but we think we can get there with the next delay. And that combined with the idea of, okay, yeah, no, we want to release twice so that we can double dip on consoles, and then having to delay into basically the next console generation but still have the current gen versions only available, I think that speaks to the fact that, like, they understood that they weren't ready. And it very much seems like a shit or get off the pot situation for them of, like, all right, yeah, we got to put this thing out because if we don't, like, we're not going to make the money we want to on it, and we can't keep people waiting, and will this game ever be ready? I feel like those questions get asked. Overall, this feels like a tale of a studio thinking that because they put out a successful project, that means that they can't have a fail. And that is very evident. There's, like, a specific quote from Jason's article where he talks about how, like, people were challenging the time frame of Cyberpunk and whether or not they could get out on time. And somebody basically answered back, "We'll figure it out along the way," because he made The Witcher 3. And that is not an acceptable answer, right? Like, that shouldn't be cause for complacency because you put out an incredible project 5 years ago. I think that I forget if I mentioned this in the actual article, but like there was also the reference of how quickly the team grew after The Witcher 3. Like, basically the team doubled in size between The Witcher 3 and CD Projekt Red, and they didn't necessarily account for that. And so when you have a team that grows like that and you don't, your company culture and your pipelines and your processes don't grow alongside that to allow for that for that ease of growth, then yeah, you're gonna have issues. Like, you can't operate like a big company but also still behave like the small indie company. And that seems like a lot of what they're doing, which is unfortunate because that's how you result in Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the I think most shocking thing to come from this are the implications that the E3 demo was fake. Like, that to me is something that I struggle to fully believe or fully get behind. It's not so much believe as much as it is get behind that statement, because it's like all demos are fake demos to some extent. And I feel like this to me is a perfect example of when it rains, it pours. And it's like when you make dire mistakes, you're going to get called out and then you get exposed for every single thing to levels that you wouldn't necessarily be criticized if you did everything else right, you know? But anyways, like, yeah, the E3 demo is the thing I definitely want to know more about, of what implying it's fake or not.
We do have more context on that because Adam Badowski, from CD Projekt Red, actually responded on Twitter, quote tweeted Jason with a whole response. I'm going to pull from Adam Bankhurst because Adam Bankhurst did a good write up on it from IGN. The response goes like this. Adam Badowski, the studio head of CD Projekt Red, has responded to a recent report regarding Cyberpunk 2077's alleged fake E3 demo and development issues. Quote, "It's hard for a trade show game demo not to be a test of vision or vertical slice 2 years before the game ships. But that doesn't mean it's fake," Badowski wrote. "Compare the demo with the game. Look at it's either Dum Dum or Doom Doom. I'm not sure how that's pronounced. But look at the Dum Dum scene or the car chase or the many other things. What the people reading your article may not know is that games are not made in a linear fashion and start looking like the final product only a few months after launch or a few months before launch. If you look at that demo now, it's different, yes, but that's what the work in progress watermark is for. Our final game looks and plays way better than what the demo ever was. As for missing features, that's part of the creation process. Features come and go as we see if they work or not. Also, car ambushes exist in the final game almost verbatim to what we showed in the demo. And if we get a bit more granular about our release, the vision we presented in this demo evolved into something that got multiple 9 out of 10s and 10 out of 10s on PC from many renowned gaming outlets in the world. As for the old gen consoles, yes, that is another case, but we've owned up to that and are working super hard to eliminate bugs, and we are proud of Cyberpunk 2077 as a game and artistic vision. This all is not what I'd call disastrous," end quote. Badowski then responded to the claim that Cyberpunk 2077 developers knew the game would not be ready for release in 2020. Quote, "You've talked with 20 people, some being ex-employees, only one of whom is not anonymous," Badowski said. "I wouldn't call that most of the over 500 people staff openly said what you claim," end quote. Lastly, Badowski addressed the claim that Polish-speaking employees would speak Polish in front of non-Polish staffers, which violated company rules and made them feel ostracized. Quote, "Everyone here speaks English during meetings. Every company-wide email and announcement is in English. All that is mandatory," Badowski explained. Quote, "Rule of thumb is to switch to English when there's a person not speaking a given language in a casual conversation. It is, however, pretty normal for Germans speaking German, Poles speaking Polish, Spaniards speaking Spanish, etc., when there's no one else around. We're working in a multicultural environment. If the question is if it's hard to move to another country, sometimes culture, and work and live there, then the answer is yes. But that's universal to every company all over the world, and we're doing what we can to ease that transition." Tim, how does that response sit with you?
Dude, I mean, it's horrible. Like, we're just at this point where it's like, no matter what anybody says, it's going to get picked apart, and the opposing side is just going to look at it and only respond to the things they want to respond to and not respond to the other stuff. So much is being thrown out here, and so much is being exposed that it's like, there's no matter what way you cut this language conversation, it's icky.
Yeah.
Like, whoever's getting called out about what side of it, it's like, this is just, it's dirty. It's like, I just don't like where we're at with all of this. And obviously there's some clear problems that need to be addressed and fixed and changed. I think at some point this just, like, there's an airing of grievances that's like, where are we going to stop this? And the answer is, it's not going to stop. These things are going to keep happening. And the more that that CD Projekt Red replies, leaving themselves open for even more criticism, it's like, oh man, you know, like, yeah. Him calling out the people that they actually talked to, the 20 people, you know, the only ones not anonymous and all that stuff. It's like, look, those are all facts. In the same way that Jason talking to these people, those are facts. It's on people to take what they want from those facts. But guess what? When you have to, like, defend yourself with that shit, it doesn't make you look good.
Yeah. No, I this statement is a bit weird to me also, because it is very much picking and choosing what it wants to respond to. And, like, I get it, right? Like, if I'm the person, right, that, like, is getting raked over the coals, and, like, people have all these things to say, and I'm looking at this huge conversation going on, and all of it is basically looking bad in my favor, but people are throwing in certain trinkets or certain tidbits that are like, wait, no, I can defend that, or no, wait, no, I can comment on that, like, that didn't happen in that way, that's still, like, I understand the urge to want to respond, but that still looks bad when, cool, you're picking and choosing, like, the fact that, no, wait, I can defend the E3 demo, because demos genuinely usually aren't final builds of the game. Like, that's what demos are. Cool, you can defend that. But in the same article, they're talking about all this different shit. Like, they're talking about crunch. They're talking about how the game just straight up wasn't ready, right? They're talking about how you guys started development in 2016, and people from the staff knew that the game wouldn't be ready until 2021, maybe 2022. And you're picking and choosing things that aren't that to comment on, that then makes it feel like you have nothing to say about the other stuff, which is a very bad look for this company that just put out the biggest game of the year, and it doesn't live up, right? Like, it's plagued with all these different issues. And so overall, I think it's an unfortunate response. I understand where some of it is coming from, especially the E3 demo stuff. Like, the E3 demo, I think, is a very complicated situation specifically, because I feel like most E3 demos that are behind closed door demos, where press don't get to play, it is just a sit down and watch sort of thing, demonstration. I feel like most of those are not genuine. Like, most of those have a hint of being fake or staged in some way.
Look, we are trained people that should know that, though.
Yeah.
Like, that's the work in progress, all the stuff, like, the conversation around these things. It's like, there's context necessary for us to understand what these things are. You know, we're very far from the old days of, like, just straight up lies of videos. You're like, that's not ever going to fucking happen. It's like, nowadays, it's like, there are things like that every once in a while, but it's like, they're just as often. When we saw the first trailer for Halo 5, and it was like Master Chief in a poncho, and that wasn't in the final game at all. And it's like, that's a conversation of, like, advertising and, you know, misrepresenting what people are going
to
get.
Like, how do you mark, like, what's the correct way to market video games when, like, video games, as much as they are a storytelling medium and an artistic medium, right? Like, video games are also technology, and technology evolves and changes over time. And so, like, to what Adam is mentioning in his write-up here, right? Like, oftentimes video games don't come together until those final moments, and then you have something that is fun to play, and you have you have the actual vision for, this is what the loop of this video game is. A lot of the time, like, when it comes to how to market that years beforehand, like, that does come down to CGI trailers or tone pieces, or in the case of Cyberpunk 2077, like, a straight up fake demo that is trying to convey what the final vision of the game is, but doesn't necessarily capture that.
It's not a straight up fake demo. It just wasn't. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a straight up fake demo. It was a demo of, and some things weren't in the final game. I played through that section of the game that I've watched them do a demo of. It was very similar.
Mm-hmm.
It's not fake. And that's the problem with all this, is, like, it's just everything gets lumped into this one conversation of just, it's just all pure negative stuff that, like, I don't think that they would have ever been called out for. And I don't think they needed to get called out for certain things. There's conversations to be had about what a demo should be. But then there's also conversations of, like, well, should E3 even be a thing? That's a whole separate issue with all of this, where it's like so many resources and developers' time need to go to making this vertical slice as part of the marketing. But that's just kind of the whole circle of life.
That's how that works.
Yeah. So it's like there would have to be a shift industry-wide to get away from all that stuff. And I don't see that ever happening.
Ladies and gentlemen, Imran Khan has entered the chat.
Demo talk for a second, because I was also there that E3 where they showed that demo.
What's up with it?
So I don't, Tim is right, it was not a fake demo. Like, literally at one point it crashed, which I guess is more real than anything else they could probably have shown. But yeah, that was not a fake demo. But I do think journalists need to make it clear when they're watching that sort of thing, hey, we didn't play any of this. We also don't know, like, whether this demo will be representative of the final game. And I think that's the important takeaway of, like, fake demo, real demo, whatever. At the end of the day, there was stuff in there that didn't make it. And people, the consumer needs to be better informed of the fact that this is not a vertical slice of the game. This is made for E3. This is, like, not a final piece of the video game.
But, I mean, everyone does that, though. Like,
yeah, I was gonna say, is that not conventional?
No, and it sucks shit. That's the thing. It sucks. And, like, this should be the time that we change it.
The media people say their experience with the game. It's like they say whether, like, oh, I didn't get to play it, but I got to see it. Like, I do feel like everybody does a good job. I don't think I've ever seen an article from an IGN, GameSpot, even going, like, down to smaller guys. There's never been a time we've been to E3, done a Gamescast, and not given the context of if we had hands-on or behind closed doors just watching stuff or what. Like, the context is there. The work in progress stuff is inherently part of the experience being talked about.
I think you're right. It is inherently part of the experience, but I don't think people are doing a good enough job of, like, making that clear. Like, I went back and read a bunch of those previews based on, like, reading Jason's story. I don't think, like, even at Game Informer, we did a very good job of saying, oh yeah, this is just, like, a possible look of what the game is going to look like. It's not going to be the actual, like, thing. And even I had an interview with CD Projekt Red that year where they're like, oh yeah, this is definitely going to be on PS4 and Xbox One, no problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we should have pushed back on that, like, because even from that demo that they showed us, no, it's not going to be obviously good on those consoles. I think they're just, the audience believes marketing to be a real thing. Like, a very representative of what the game is.
How much of that is on the developer versus, like, the audience and folks in media, though? Because I feel like, for me, as somebody who pays attention, for me, I feel like that's conventional knowledge. In terms of, I remember in 2019, in the E3s in which they demoed behind the closed doors of Cyberpunk 2077, I remember listening to podcasts of people talking about, oh yeah, like, they sat us down, I didn't get to play it, but I watched 40 minutes of them playing it, and it looked incredible. I feel like for me, as a podcast listener or as a reader, that is enough for me to go, okay, cool, CD Projekt Red is showing these folks a thing. Those folks are basically, like, the messenger of, hey, we saw this and this is how it looked. But it's kind of on me to be like, cool, we're gonna see how that looks when it actually comes out, because in the way that video games are developed and the way that video games are marketed, like, a lot of that stuff is bullshit, right? Like, a lot of that stuff is not going to make it into the final game, because one, it's a work in progress, or two, like, that's based on a vision of what they want the game to be and not necessarily what the final game is.
I think publishers know what marketing works and what doesn't, and if they didn't know, then they wouldn't have tried to hide that old version of the consoles. Like, it is, I don't think this is entirely to blame, or this is not put entirely on CDPR. They did not do anything different than most developers do at E3. I just think, like, for me, looking at that story and being like, I think it's very important how we report these things in the future, because I don't think a lot of the audience does get exactly how much this is in terms of smoke and mirrors.
Yeah, like, I think for me, the marketing of Cyberpunk 2077 didn't get egregious until this year, specifically, like, in the way they handled the review process. You know, like, I think the, like, from how marketing of video games is typically done, I feel like CD Projekt Red pretty much followed the motions of, hey, yeah, like, Here's the behind the closed doors. Okay, here's the gameplay demo for people to watch. All right, here's your trailers. Here's the preview that we did in June 2021 or 2020 that I went to, right? That had to be done a certain way because of COVID and all that. And that felt like it was following the motions pretty typically.
Well, but it didn't miss one major thing.
What's that?
Which was the E3 hands-on circuit of console versions and everything, of people actually being able to play it in a broader sense instead of just like the random people playing using their the GeForce stream stuff.
Exactly. And that gets so difficult because the situation we're in the world, right? Like they didn't necessarily have an opportunity to make that happen. Granted, I think without COVID, in a world where Cyberpunk was still it's a tough conversation, because without COVID, maybe Cyberpunk plays better because that didn't affect their development as much. But in theory, right, like even without COVID, if Cyberpunk is still the way it is today on console, I don't think we would have played that anyway. Like, I don't think anybody would have gotten their hands on console versions until they were actually out. And I think that is the most egregious thing about the marketing of Cyberpunk 2077. Like, nobody got their hands on console versions until the game was actually out, which means that people are playing versions that aren't reviewed, aren't previewed, and are broken, which is straight up mismarketing.
The worst thing about that is it was a ultimate betrayal of trust there, because there was the assumption of like CD Projekt Red has this, like give them the benefit of the doubt, because these games are going to come out and they're going to work. And then they came out and they didn't work. And it's like, well, now you totally fucked the whole system up, because you should have done this correctly, because why would we expect that they wouldn't do it right based on their prior track record?
Yeah.
But then now it's like, well, your track record is now this, so next time we're all gonna know what to look for and what, you know, not to get excited about.
I do think there was also like they kind of straight up lied in that apology, and that's a problem that they have not come out, because they said console codes came out on the 8th, which I don't know where they
I don't know anybody who got console codes on the 8th.
But like, no one I've ever talked to has said they got console codes.
Even at launch, I don't know anybody who got console codes. Maybe that happened, but I don't. Yeah, I don't recall anybody talking about ever getting console codes for that game.
And like, we know enough people. There are enough people within the circles around us that like we would have heard that. And
yeah, like we didn't get any. Like, I think most of us bought Cyberpunk 2077 who played it.
Mm-hmm.
You hate to see it.
You hate to see it, man. I can't wait till this shit's over. And I don't know. I don't think it's gonna be over anytime soon, man.
When do you think it ends, when the next big video game controversy starts? Like, when do we stop talking about Cyberpunk 2077?
I don't think we do. I think that it's gonna just continue. And I
is
think
this life now?
I think that this back and forth kind of like responding to responses between Schreier and CD Projekt Red, I don't think this is over.
Yeah, he should stop doing that. The head of CD Projekt Red should not let Jason Schreier live in his head rent-free. Like, this is that work on getting better. Like, if I were working PR for that company, it would be
you don't get to talk. You don't get to talk anymore. We're going to do all the talking for you, and we're barely going to talk. We're only going to talk when we need to say shit.
Yeah. Make a point of, this is how we're doing better. Not just like, no, you were wrong about the language thing. Which, to be clear, the language thing was super dumb on like the story's part. That should not have been included. But like
totally. Like, that's the problem with all of this. It's like, at some point it just becomes noise, and it just like, it is inviting people to respond to the wrong things. And then you're able to be like, well, you didn't respond to this, you responded to that. It's like, oh, why are we talking about all this in the same conversation? We need to focus on each thing being bad and talk about it that way, or else we're just gonna be stuck with this. And here we are in Games Daily for day 27 of talking about CD Projekt Red's mistakes.
It'll be once that next gen version comes out, it'll be like, all right, let's put this in the paces, let's see if this is any better. Like, it'll be through October.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Y'all have a good show.
Thank you, Imran.
To put a stamp on this conversation, this morning, Jason Schreier put out another article on Kotaku. No, this is an old article. Never mind. He did not put out another article. This is an old article that Jason Schreier tweeted about Rockstar and about how they've made big cultural changes 18 months after Red Dead Redemption 2. This article is from, it looks like, April 15th, 2020. You can go read it if you want, but basically it's talking about how because of how Crunch was exposed and all these different things over at Rockstar, they were kind of forced into making their own big cultural changes, and now culture is looking a lot better over there. I'm going to make that required reading it's like required old reading, but required reading nonetheless, because I think it gives us like a look inside. This is why some of these stories are necessary, right? To like expose some of this shit. I'm with the idea of there is like a lot of noise around CD Projekt Red right now, because there's so much shit being picked apart and being looked into, and I feel like it's creating this big old noise bubble around actual issues that are over there. But in terms of the issue of crunch, in terms of the issues of marketing, in terms of all that stuff, like a lot of this is necessary. And so hopefully this gets us to where we need to be in terms of Cyberpunk as a game, and then also in terms of the industry and how we operate now. Unfinished games, man, shouldn't be released.
Motherfuckers need to take note. Like, you can't look at the last 2 years and keep acting the way you were. The changes needed to happen yesterday. And if these, no matter how big or small a team you are, if you're not looking at all this stuff and adjusting and fixing the problems that exist, you're fucked.
100%. For good reason. Tim, let's talk about some good news. Story number two. What's up with Sony's mysterious new studio? This is from Ali Jones at Games Radar. Sony's mysterious San Diego studio appears to be working on some of the company's existing franchises. As spotted on Reddit, the LinkedIn profile of one Sony veteran offers some more clues as to the existence of the team and what games it's focused on. The new information comes via the LinkedIn profile of Michael Mombar, who left Sony Worldwide Studios in November 2020 after more than 13 years with the company, where he worked as a studio head and senior director of visual arts. Toward the bottom of his bio, one paragraph reads that Mombar's, quote, latest achievement is having built a brand new all-star AAA action-adventure development team for PlayStation, end quote, which was assembled to expand upon existing franchises and craft all new stories for the next generation of gamers. The kicker is that the team is based in San Diego, where rumors of a second Sony studio distinct from Sony San Diego, I know this is confusing, Sony San Diego works on MLB The Show in those games. This is a different San Diego studio. Rumors of that studio have been circulating since 2018. Sony has never officially announced a new San Diego studio, but rumors of its existence have been doing the rounds for a few years now, with some suggesting that it'll be taking over the development of the Uncharted series from The Last of Us Part II developer, Naughty Dog. I like how that story says the Uncharted series from The Last of Us Part II developer instead of saying the Uncharted series from the Uncharted developer, but we get the point. exciting stuff, Tim.
Oh, a new studio. Exciting. All of this to me is exciting news. A new PlayStation studio focused on AAA action adventure games. Let's go. Existing franchises, I love that. I would always want some more Uncharted. You got to assume this is Uncharted. Let's take a second and get out of the obvious, do a little exercise. Bless
Killzone.
Could it be something else?
Killzone? No, it's not Killzone. I mean, I don't know what I don't know what else it could be, especially with that specific description of a AAA action adventure franchise, right? Like existing franchise for mm-hmm. PlayStation. Out of the ones that PlayStation has that they would want to do, I think it would be Uncharted, especially because I don't think Naughty Dog would want to continue doing Uncharted. I feel like Uncharted for Naughty Dog is a done deal, and I would want Naughty Dog to work on something new and fresh. And so with that being the case, I'd say, yeah, give Uncharted to Sony San Diego, because I think there's still life in Uncharted. Uncharted is one of those series that they can keep churning those things out, mm-hmm. and I think we'd all be fine with it. Because it's not like The Last of Us, where The Last of Us' story is so grounded and I feel like important to people meaningful. In a way that, yeah, meaningful to people in a way that, cool, if you're going to do another Last of Us, that story has to feel meaningful and it has to be impeccable and it has to be worth telling. Uncharted is one of those series where I feel like you can just, give me a solely prequel and I'll watch it. I'll play it. You know, yeah. Give me another Chloe and Nadine story. I'll play that shit. Give me as many Uncharted as you want. I'll play mm-hmm. that shit. That shit sounds fun.
Amen. Preach, brother. I love it. I love Uncharted. Love Lost Legacy. I want more. And I am okay with it not being Naughty Dog. And this sounds great to me. Definitely always love seeing new teams pop up, especially seeing a team like this, like another hopefully core PlayStation Studios studio. Like, that's mm-hmm. awesome. I love everything I'm hearing about this.
The Nanobiologist writes into patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, just like you can, and says, hi, Bless and Tim. Happy Monday. So today, we got an all but confirmation that Sony has also been building a new studio for their lineup. However, this one seems to be taking projects from other studios to keep them going. How successful do you think the strategy will be? Xbox has done this in the past, and it has more or less led to an overuse of their properties. While an Uncharted 5 would be interesting, wouldn't this new studio be better suited to just bringing more fresh and new ideas? This feels very reminiscent of the Killzone debate from last week that both solves and creates problems that the industry suffers from. Nostalgia being a key factor and never letting ideas rest. Also, why Uncharted? While I get that the series is very big, it wrapped up well enough and will not feel the same as if Naughty Dog will make it. Thanks, the nanobiologist. Tim, how successful do you think the strategy will be?
I think it has the potential to be very successful. Obviously, the quality has to be there. Sony hasn't really made decisions recently that would lead me to believe that it won't be, right? Like, they kind of seem to have a good grasp on what they're doing. They have very talented teams over there. In terms of the new IP versus Uncharted, I think that there's room for both. And I think that we've actually done fairly good about new IP in the last generation or so. And there's just... the gaming space is big enough and has a vast kind of like there are more opportunities than ever for different games to be made on every level of the scale from indie all the way up to AAA. And with that, I think that there's a lot of fresh blood and new ideas, even for like previously established franchises. We saw it with God of War, we saw it with Zelda. What if this could be that for Uncharted? You know, them kind of like someone else breathing some new life into something that we're so familiar with, maintaining the things that are special about it that we enjoy, but, you know, kind of like having a different perspective, a different, you know, vibe to the game. I think that could be really cool. And it's not like we're getting Uncharted games every year, right? Like, it's been a while since we've got one. So, like, I'm itching for one. I'd be excited to get that because we are getting Days Gone. We are getting Death Stranding. We are getting Horizon. We are getting... you know, so many new IP from PlayStation Studios.
That's my thing is I think this is a good move because it allows other PlayStation Studios to continue to creating new and fresh ideas. Like, this last generation has been such a great generation for PlayStation Studios because you mentioned it. We got Ghost of Tsushima, we got Horizon Zero Dawn, we got Death Stranding, we got Dreams. Like, we got so many, I know Spider-Man isn't a new IP, quote unquote, but it is a new core gaming franchise for PlayStation. And we've gotten so much of that this last generation, and I want to see that continue. And so if that means that Sony, the new Sony San Diego studio is going to be able to work on an Uncharted so that Naughty Dog can make something new, I think that's awesome. If anything, that kind of reminds me a little bit of Bluepoint and how they operate. You know, Bluepoint, they put out in the last generation now, I guess in the last two generations, they put out Shadow of the Colossus remake, and they've also put out Demon's Souls remake. And that's kind of, it's a little bit apples and oranges because they aren't continuing already existing franchises, but they are taking stuff that people have worked on and breathing new life into it in a way that keeps that Sony catalog exciting and fresh, even though these are older games. If Sony San Diego number two can do the same thing and breathe new life into Uncharted or breathe new life into Infamous or take whatever the franchise is and continue it so that other studios can continue to do their thing, I think that's awesome. I'm totally down for that. And now that I mentioned Infamous, like, I wouldn't mind if it was that either, honestly.
You know? that could be interesting. I do think it's Uncharted, but
Uncharted would make the most sense, I think. I think you do Uncharted because, one, it'll sell. Like, people love Uncharted. Uncharted will sell as a Sony first party franchise. But then also, it's one of those ones where, like, I think you could get away with it not being Naughty Dog in a way that, like, I feel like with there's some games, right? Metal Gear Solid, I guess Death Stranding you can put in here too, right? Like, if I got another Metal Gear Solid and Hideo Kojima is not attached to it, I'd be like, I don't know. If we got another Last of Us and Naughty Dog is not attached to it, I'd be like, okay, we'll see. Uncharted is one of those where we've gotten so much Uncharted with Naughty Dog, and it feels like they have closure with it. Yeah. That if another studio took it over, I'd be down for it. I'd be down to give it a go.
It could still be something special. It could still be good. But I think you're right. It's like, it wasn't just the quantity of Uncharted games. It's the level of quality. But specifically to me, it was Uncharted 4.
Yes.
Kind of being this like, okay, here's us saying goodbye to this. And then we got the Lost Legacy, which is like almost like an epilogue of gameplay, right? For people where it's like, you did have a couple more ideas, so we're going to give you this. And it had a nice bow where they're like, all right, cool. we're now moving on. I hope Naughty Dog are making a new IP now as their next
thing,
because that is exciting to me. They've now proven to me multiple franchises in a row that they make very special games out of nothing. So what could be next while whatever this studio is? And I wonder when we're going to hear about the studio. You got to imagine eventually they're going to announce this game and that's going to be like the first time we see the logo or something.
Oh yeah, no, I think it has to be this year, right? Like with the amount of rumors that have been circulating, I feel like you want to get ahead of this before basically like the whole thing leaks. And so I feel like if I was Sony, I'd be like, okay, we got to announce this sooner than later. And this game, I'd imagine, is not like too far away. If this studio has existed for a couple of years already, like say this game is a 2022 or a 2023 game, you could announce it this year and get away with it and get people hyped about that.
I don't know. I mean, we'll see. But like, I'm really interested on Gamescast. I imagine next week it might be a week after that. We're going to do our predictions for 2021. And I was thinking about this a couple of nights ago. Like, we're in a weird place right now where, unlike last year, where it's like, oh man, the PS5 and Xbox Series X and S need to be revealed soon. And it was like, will it be March? Will it be April? Will it be? You know, just kind of kept going on. And then, you know, Corona and E3 went away and all that, you know, blah, blah, blah. Where we're at right now, looking at 2021, it's like, what's the next time? We got Resident Evil Showcase this week.
Mm-hmm.
But then what? Like,
Tim, what's going on?
We're looking forward to.
What's going on with Nintendo Directs?
It's a good fucking question.
I feel like it's been such a long time since we've gotten a proper Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
Have we gotten one within, like aside from the partner showcases and the Smash Brothers stuff, and like specific ones, have we gotten a Nintendo Direct like a basic ass, here's a bunch of different games? Like, have we gotten that within the last like year?
I want to say September 2019 was the last real proper Nintendo Direct.
This pains me.
Yeah.
I miss it. Painful. I miss them. Kind of funny.com/you're wrong if you remember there being like a different proper Nintendo Direct. But yeah, like I want another one. Cause like
I do too.
I want to know what Nintendo's doing. I want to know what they're working on.
What the hell are they doing? We'll see. Eventually, maybe. I don't know. Like, we actually went all of last year and we had Animal Crossing and then Paper Mario. And
yeah,
that was it.
3D All Stars.
We got 3D All Stars. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then now we got Mario 3D World, Bowser's Fury coming out soon. Then we got new Pokemon Snap. But then it's like,
yeah,
it is the 25th anniversary of Pokemon, so I think we're gonna get some more Pokemon stuff soon.
Yeah,
I don't know.
There's got to be a Pokemon game this fall, you imagine.
Yeah. Will it be Diamond and Pearl remakes?
We'll have to wait and see. Tim, speaking of new game studios, story number three, Ninja Gaiden's Tomonobu Itagaki establishes a new studio. This is from Marie de Alessandri at gamesindustry.biz.
Itagaki.
Wait, what was that?
Itagaki. Yeah.
Dead or Alive and Ninja Gaiden director Tomonobu Itagaki announced the creation of his new studio, Itagaki Games. He made the announcement on his Facebook page, sharing previously unpublished extracts of an interview he did with Bloomberg. He explained that he's been teaching game development for the past 4 years, but now wants to make games again and just established a company for that purpose. He didn't reveal much details about his new studio, apart from clarifying that it's completely separate from previous employers, Tecmo and Devil's Third developer Valhalla. Considering Itagaki's close links with Microsoft, his Ninja Gaiden games were Xbox exclusives, Bloomberg asked him how he'd react if he was approached to become a Microsoft studio. He replied, quote, "If they reach out to me, it will be an honor for me," end quote. Tim, could a new Microsoft studio be in the works?
Hey, look, man, I think that'd be interesting. I think I've always kind of associated his games with Xbox anyways, just from the Dead or Alive perspective and Ninja Gaiden.
What, was Dead or Alive an Xbox exclusive game at one point?
Dead or Alive 3 was a Xbox exclusive.
Okay.
At least timed exclusive, because I remember it was a launch game, if I remember correctly, or at least early.
I remember vividly as a kid playing Dead or Alive at a friend's house who had an Xbox, and that was like my first interaction with it, and I hadn't thought about it since then. Like I haven't thought about it, like super often since then, and so I never like even knew like it was Dead or Alive tied to Xbox specifically.
My main character that I played in Dead or Alive 3 was the dude.
Was it the old dude? Just,
no.
Because that was the one I played. I like the old guy.
I liked Zach. Zach was the black dude. And my favorite thing about him is, like, way too many times he'd say, "It's bitching."
Oh, that's awesome.
I was like, that is the most ridiculous thing to say in a fight ever. Real quick tangent. Bless, have you ever seen the Dead or Alive movie?
No, I didn't know there was a Dead or Alive movie.
Okay, there is a Dead or Alive movie. It was made by Uwe Boll. So it's like the dude that makes all the really, really, really bad video game movies. Like, it is like, it's bad. It's trash level bad. It has Suki from Too Fast, Too Furious as Katsumi. And it has a cast that looks identical to, like, they kind of nailed casting for everyone, which is really fun. But my favorite thing about the movie is they found a way to actually have health bars. Like, that's, they had an excuse to have health bars for the fights. So as they would hit each other, they were, like, injected with, like, some biometric whatever.
It was nanomachines.
I want to watch this.
It was nanomachine shit.
Yeah.
And, like, they'd fight with the health bars and stuff. And, like, I enjoyed the shit out of the movie. It is utter trash. But, Tim, like, they, like, did a good job of making it a video game.
One day, we're going to run out of ideas for in review, and I would like to pitch bad video game movies in review.
What if I told you I've already looked into it, and there are way more than you expect? There are hundreds, it feels like. Like, there's a Wikipedia list of so many movies, and I'm just like, I just want to watch Mario.
Dude, I would be super into that. We could, like, you could do, like, a Patreon vote. What are the 20 movies or, like, the 10 movies that we got to watch for bad video game movies in review? I feel like there's a way to do it.
Oh, man.
But God. That'd be a great one. The one thing I remember about Dead or Alive was that it was my first encounter with a fighting game that had, like, the tag in moves where you do 2-on-2 fights, like the tag team fights, and in the middle of a combo you would tag in your partner and then come out of nowhere, like, hop from the ceiling and, like, stomp on your opponent. That shit was fucking tight. That I know, like, really, really cool. I know Tekken Tag Tournament probably did it first, but, like, Dead or Alive was my first time with that type of shit in it, and I was like, I was sold. I was like, this is fucking phenomenal. I was all about it.
DJ Kento in the chat, you're wrong to me. It was not Uwe Boll that directed it. It was Corey Ewan.
Mm.
So there you go.
There you go. Before I get into our last news story of the day, I want to tell you about our sponsor. Of course, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames where you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, this episode of Kind of Funny Games Daily is brought to you by Purple Mattress. Let me say that again, because I had, like, a thing in my throat. Purple Mattress. Throw some bedding on a bunch of different mattresses. Sure, they all look alike. The same goes for pillows. But peel away the layers, look at what's inside, and you'll see they aren't all created equal. And that's what makes every Purple pillow and mattress unlike anything you've ever slept on. The Purple Grid sets the Purple Mattress apart from every other mattress. It's a patented comfort technology that instantly adapts to your body's natural shape and sleep style. With over 1,800 open air channels designed to neutralize body heat, Purple provides a cooling effect other mattresses can't replicate. And this cutting-edge technology doesn't stop with the mattresses. Every Purple pillow is engineered with the grid for total head and neck support and absolute airflow. So you're always on the cool side of the pillow. That sounds really cool.
Dude,
it's like somebody's flipping your pillow for you.
It is insane. It is honestly some of the craziest witchcraft I've ever experienced when it comes to sleeping. Mm-hmm. Like, the Purple pillow is fantastic.
Wow. Purple's proprietary technology has been innovating comfort for over 15 years. Kind of Funny's own Joey Noel has been using Purple Mattress, and she absolutely loves it. She says, quote, "It was surprisingly easy to set up and super squishy and cozy," end quote. You can try every Purple product risk-free with free shipping and returns, and Purple has financing available as low as 0% APR for qualified customers. Experience the Purple grid, and you'll sleep like never before. Go to purple.com/games10 and use promo code games10 for a limited time. You'll get 10% off any order of $200 or more. That's purple.com/games10 and use promo code games10 for 10% off any order of $200 or more. Terms apply. Tim.
Yeah.
That young hitman is coming through soon. Story number 4. Hitman is working on a solution to his PC problem. This is from John Fingus at Engadget. To catch you up, Hitman 3, right, coming out on all platforms. Very exciting. There's a problem on PC where the game is Epic exclusive. The whole thing with Hitman, though, is that it has the world of assassination, meaning that if you have Hitman 1 and Hitman 2, you should be able to bring your levels into Hitman 3. The problem is that because it's Epic exclusive, if you don't have Hitman 1 and Hitman 2 on Epic, then you're kind of screwed with that. And also, I don't believe Hitman 2 is even available on Epic Games Game Store, kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. And so there are issues surrounding all of that. They have a fix. This is John Fingus at Engadget. IO Interactive's plans to let Hitman 3 players use earlier games as locations might not have panned out as planned, but that doesn't mean you have to rebuy those first two titles. The developer has promised that PC gamers who own Hitman or Hitman 2 won't have to purchase those games another time just to access their earlier material in the new Assassin title. It outlined in a guide that it was continuing to work on a solution that would allow importing that would allow importing locations for free, but didn't say when it would be ready beyond sometime in the coming weeks. There's a solution in the meantime. IO said it would make the Hitman 1 Game of the Year Access Pass to transfer content to the new game available for free to all PC customers who either pre-order Hitman 3 on the Epic Game Store or buy it within the first 10 days. Anyone who owns the original Hitman on Epic Games Store will get a free Game of the Year Access Pass when they buy the third game, too. You won't be quite so lucky with Hitman 2, but both the Standard and Gold Access Passes will be available at 80% discounts for 2 weeks after Hitman 3's launch. It's not a perfect solution. While console gamers will get import content for free, there's a chance you'll still pay some money on PC. Still, this might be relieving if you were worried you might have to rebuy older games just to enjoy the continuity IO said you'd get. Very exciting stuff. Kevin, I have a trailer that I want you to play. Ooh. From Hitman 3. They uploaded their launch trailer today. I watched through it. It's a very good trailer. It's like a really good tone setting piece. Tim, I don't know if you've seen this thing.
I haven't. And I'm excited. This is going to be my first time jumping into the Hitman reboot. Yeah. Franchise. I played it once for a let's play we did, but I'm excited for Hitman 3.
Do you like what has you jumping in this time?
At this point, it's just like there's been so much praise for, you know, the episodic ones over the last couple of years, and seeing this being promoted the way it has in like the Sony shows in 2020, I'm like, well, fuck, it looks fantastic.
Kevin, you can go ahead and play the trailer. Does that have sound, by the way?
It should, but of course Twitter fucking sucks, so now it's broken.
Yeah, it's Twitter.
It won't play.
You could find it on YouTube if you wanted to.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of.
That might take a second, though. But yeah, no, Tim, I'm excited for you to check out Hitman. Like,
we can hear it.
I can hear it. You can hear it now.
Oh, you can.
We can. Yeah, okay. It's good. All right, so we got the trailer. It has the IO logo for audio listeners. There's a lot of red.
And it is pixelated to no end, man.
Yeah. Trust me when I say the actual video is very high definition if you go on YouTube. Well, you got a lot of cool looking lights and colors. Has me very excited about what ray tracing has in store on PlayStation.
Is this music going to get us in trouble?
You know what? That's a good question. Yeah, maybe lower that thing. But yeah, it's basically like a really good tone setting piece of like all these cool, beautiful shots.
So I have a question for you, Bless.
What's up?
Kev, if you could turn it down just a little more.
Motherfucker.
So this, it comes with the content from Hitman 1 and 2, right? I'm going to be playing on PS5.
Uh-huh. If it comes with the content, you need the deluxe, like the deluxe edition or the access pass. I'm not sure all the details. But if you own Hitman 1 and Hitman 2, you should have that stuff automatically. If not, then I think you'll have to buy an access pass.
Do you think I could just jump into Hitman 3?
Yeah.
Because that's what I'm planning on doing.
Yeah, I think that should be fine. Like, usually the games start off with the same tutorial that was in Hitman 1. And there's a story, but like from Hitman 1 and Hitman 2, I've not cared about the story really. And apparently for Hitman, like from previewing Hitman 3, right? Like it seems like they're trying to lean into it a bit more, but even still, I don't think you really need to go through Hitman 1 and Hitman 2. I think you just jump in Hitman 3 and have a fun time. Like, the core of the game is jumping into a level and taking out the target. And that's pretty much every level. And as long as you know that, then like, you're golden. Cool. And so, it's a cool trailer. Thank you again, Kevin. My thing with this trailer even though it's a great tone piece and great for setting like the vibes and the expectation we can get out of Hitman 3, Hitman 3 is not an action game. And like from this trailer and from like the VR trailer that they showed a bit ago, like those trailers make Hitman seem like a very action-y franchise, and it is not. Like most of my time spent in Hitman is spent like standing in one room waiting for my target to walk by so I can lure them in and murder them. Like that is 99% of my time in Hitman, and it is a blast. So very much looking forward to that. Tim, Hitman 3, I'm very excited for it, but the release is just so far away. If I want to know what's coming out to mom and grab shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Out today, we got Olympic Table Tennis for Switch, Spinny's Journey for Switch, and then Red Colony for Switch. New dates for you. Respawn today announced that Apex Legends will be celebrating its 2-year anniversary in explosive style with the game's next major update, Season 8 Mayhem. Arriving February 2nd, Season 8 Mayhem will introduce the 16th legend to the arena with Fuse, the laid-back explosives enthusiast. It'll add the 33rd Repeater, a lever action rifle, and shake up King's Canyon in the iconic map's third major overhaul. I really hope they bring back Skulltown because I very much miss Skulltown. Rustler comes to Steam Early Access on February 18th, and then Nuts is coming to Apple Arcade this Friday for Switch and Steam on February 4th. Not this Friday. No, I see. It's coming to Apple Arcade this Friday. It'll come to Switch and Steam on February 4th.
I want to watch a trailer for Nuts. Because
have you seen it already?
No, I haven't.
Dude, it looks good.
I'm sending it to Assets right
It's
now.
A Pop Agenda joint. And so it came through my timeline.
Really?
Yeah.
That's really
It came
funny.
Through my timeline, and I was like, this looks like a fun time.
But yeah, so here we go. Nuts.
Really cool art style.
You made it.
For audio listeners, it's like Nina. A very minimalist, like completely, it has like, I guess, monotones or dual tones in like the color schemes. And so like, there's like orange and blue that fills the screen right now. I'm doing a bad job of describing this, but trust me when I say it looks good.
Yeah, audio listeners, come check it out. He's doing a terrible job. This looks
yeah, just
cool.
Watch it. I'm doing a terrible job of describing this. It looks like a minimalistic Firewatch almost.
It does. That's exactly
with
what
squirrels.
I was thinking.
It's weird, yeah. Right? This looks very much like Firewatch, actually, now that I'm watching this for the second time.
Is it going to get
this
scary?
This looks nuts.
What the? Is that what I think it is?
TNT.
Why would a squirrel stash dynamite?
Okay, this is 100% Firewatch.
What the ever
with squirrels.
Or the happening, but there were squirrels.
Dude, what the hell? That actually looks really dope.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I'm very excited to try that out. It's like, what the fuck are these squirrels doing? Let's figure it out. Let's take some pictures. Very excited for it. Tim.
Mm-hmm.
We did a good job this episode of asking questions during the show, and so we don't have any questions for viewer mail. And so I'm going to get straight into the squad up. Gary writes in. Is it Gary Whitta? Nobody knows. With a squad up on PS4 and says, Fall Guys, I need that squad win trophy. I'm also up for some squadrons in VR, Ghost Legends, and Fortnite. I live in Bangkok, a 12-hour difference from Eastern Standard Time, but I game at all hours, so hit me up. If you want to play with Gary, Gary's on PS4 with the username G-Blaster. That is G-B-L-A-S-T-R. G-Blaster. Hit up Gary. Have a good time in that Fall Guys. Now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. We write in a list of what we got wrong as we got it wrong. Let's see here. Big Bad Beluga writes in and says, CDPR head's name is pronounced Marcin Iwinski. But I don't think I said that name today. And so
I think he's just giving us Poland facts.
Yeah, just giving us Poland facts. I appreciate it. Bull Borden says, Miss News news slash update. Middle Earth Shadow of Mordor servers were shut down last Tuesday. This would have made 3 achievements slash trophies unattainable. However, due to feedback from the community, Monolith has patched these achievements so that they no longer require the discontinued on, meaning your platinum is saved if you're trying to platinum Shadow of Mordor years past. That's actually like one of the few platinums I have, Shadow of Mordor, because that was such a fun platinum.
People are just saying I was right about the September 4th, 2019.
Yeah, about the direct, yeah. So we're good on that. And then one more from Nanobah. Just Nanobah just writes in and says, Dead or Alive 3 and 4 were Xbox exclusive, releasing on the Xbox and 360, respectively. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. This week's host for Kind of Funny Games Daily go like this. Tuesday is Greg and Gary Witta. Wednesday, it's me and Imran for Blem Ron Wednesdays. Thursday is Greg and Tim. And then Friday, it's me and the homie Natalie Flores from Fanbyte. That will be our Kind of Funny spotlight, so look forward to that. If you're watching this live on Twitch right now, after this is Andy, Nick, and Snowback Mike playing some of them video games, so look forward to that. Of course, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. We have a Patreon post show for those that are subbed at the silver level of patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, so stick around for that. Otherwise, until next time, Game Daily.